Doctor, I have come to you with the expectation that together we will sever the knot of my perplexed, my perpetual infancy. Weighted down by virtual baggage, I am not, as you noted instantly, an autonomous being, and autonomy is precisely what I am wanting. However, I have what you call a sexual soul, or rather, the capacity to evolve into a sexual being, to reveal an authentic blue streak, the capacity not only to inspire but to withstand heat, to weather my stripes and to shed my old skin. I intend to astonish us both. You asked me any number of things. You startled me. Almost at once, my heart quickened with something like hope. Is he really after the truth? Is he able to look into the darkest corners of the heart without flinching? The man is no prude, I thought, and furthermore, he is smart and good-looking, Sumerian, a Semitic face, the beard threaded with silver, nose prominent, eyes deepest black. Not that I, supine on the little couch and staring at the ceiling in the classic pose, got to see much of your face. Again, you asked me any number of things, all interesting and necessary, and this despite the risks you described, or, as you so engagingly revealed to me, because of the risks implied. Obviously, as you pointed out, there is always danger when the engagement is acute, as in passionate loving. We are talking about real life here, you said. That is the intention of the work we have undertaken together. A thrilling phrase. I think of Houdini unpuzzling his chains and rising to the surface of his man-sized aquarium, undertaken together. I shall help you rob my own grave so that I may steal away with my own intrinsic capacity to be someone. It occurs to me that to engage in the world of the living, one must be prompt, if only because there is so little time. And yet there you sit, doctor, praying at the temples. Don't you hear the winds of time raging about your little office in the sky? I've always been sluggish. Although my infancy was punctuated by my mother's rallying cry, "Step on it!" I misunderstood. I thought that time was to be killed, crushed beneath the foot like a centipede, else it leaped to my leg and inflict a mortal sting. I imagined wasting away. You evoked Plotinus and Jung simultaneously when you added, "Each memory, dream, and reflection must inform the immediate present. We are," you said also, "about to confront the chaos of cryptic language, but rest assured, the characters, runes, wedges, hieroglyphs, whatever, all mean something." And so the vortex I carry within me, just as chaos itself, is simply an undeciphered and uncharted system. My first memories are of such uncharted and undeciphered spaces, of a white light which was the sky over Iran, a brilliant light illuminating particles of dust. I was perhaps 3 or 4 and had no notion of numbers, but surely a sense of the infinite, because I recall that sky and those reeling particles with an extreme fear, as though I could be swallowed up in such a swarming. The world revealed itself to me at that moment and for the first time. My senses were accosted on all sides at once, and so great was that swarm in my mind that to this day I believe I saw a man with the head of a camel and a donkey with a man's body, and as alive as you and I. My father was president of both the American Bible Society and a soft drink company. He hoped to convince his Iranian hosts of the inevitability of Christ and carbonated coffee. He failed, but even now, the short years we spent in Iran animate my dreams. For example, I have a recurrent dream of a bazaar in which upon the unpaved dirt all things of significance are laid out, not only dates and sugarcane, but ideas, the idea of color and the idea of music, flavors also, the gummy eyes of children going blind, luxurious grief, violent anger, passionate love and wickedness, fragments of poetry, the supreme deity, and he is a cherub with the body of a bull and the head of a man, the fall of man, the cattle of the field, the pine tree of Eridu, the severed head of our servant. His name was Haji. Haji's head displayed like a geographer's plaster model, his ruined eye a volcano, the scar from temple to chin a river of fire. Although it was not Haji's head that was cut off, but his hand, for he had stolen a box of Bisquick from my mother's kitchen. My father attempted to beg for leniency, but by preparing American pancakes for his family in his hovel, Haji had dishonored his country, so that the final months in Iran were marked by shame and horror and all the ensuing hocus-pocus. My parents, motivated by dread, argued the Bible's most cryptic passages, and then Mother fled the ancient world for the new in a fit of loathing, and she took me with her.